Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah?
So sporty.
Oh, yeah?
Sports and sports and sports.
Oh, yeah?
Sports in your face.
Oh, yeah?
Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah?
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The 1-1 to Kemp. Should end it. Bogarts gathers it in. Red Sox up 2-0. 4-2 win in game two. And David Price has won back-to-back starts. Game five of the ALCS. Game two of the World Series.
And there you go. Red Sox, once again, win last night. Felger Maz coming to you from our Star Market Broadcast Studios at the TD Garden. Bruins are in town tonight, so we're here. Celtics are also on our air tonight as well. So we got that on the board, but we're going to be mostly Red Sox today, as you might imagine, after that World Series win last night. We got Maz and Murray alongside. Maz, where do you start with that one?
Okay, so to me, and I told you guys this in the exchange, email exchange this morning, now I'm impressed.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Now I'm impressed. Wow. And I'm talking about the game specifically more than I am the series. Okay, now I'm impressed. That kind of win last night, there are other wins that have been more entertaining, that have demonstrated more grit and resolve, all of that stuff. But to me, that game last night, that was like, for me, and I'm talking about the Red Sox as a staff now, one of the best pitch postseason games I've ever seen them have. And I'm talking about the whole lot of them, from the start of the very first pitch through the closer and the last pitch of the game. You can talk about individual performances, Curt Schilling in other years, whatever, Beckett, fine. But as a team, as a staff, that thing last night, that kind of win gets me aroused, for crying out loud, really, when you weigh it out.
So now you're impressed.
I just think that, to me, that was a classic.
Well, we finally got there, Murray.
It took the 117th win.
No, we got it.
I'm glad we finally got there.
So that's the one I wanted to see.
Okay, well, you readily admit, though, it's over. Like I said before, we even started this World Series.
God, no.
It's not over?
No.
Stop it.
No, it's not over. And I'll tell you why it's not over. Because, first of all, I don't love the pitching matchup in Game 3. I think there's a chance they get hammered.
You didn't like the pitching matchup last night.
I haven't liked the pitching matchup the whole series for the Red Sox, and they've outpitched the Dodgers, haven't they?
I never said I didn't like the pitching matchup last night. Now you're putting words in my mouth. I'm talking about the next matchup is horrible. But yes, they've outpitched the Dodgers.
They've outpitched them.
And that's what happened last night, which is why that win impressed me. That kind of game is the Dodgers' strength. They got good pitching. They have a better bullpen than you, all of that. And the Red Sox were lights out in that game.
So let me ask you, I was thinking about this, because that's my leadoff thought, too, that the Dodgers have outpitched. I mean, I'm sorry, that you've outpitched the Dodgers. And I thought that was the Dodgers' big advantage there, going into the series, that they had a better pitching staff, and you've outpitched them through two games. Is that in a vacuum, or is that because you're throwing to their lineup and they're throwing to yours? In other words, if this Red Sox staff was throwing to the Red Sox lineup, would they be faring better than the Dodgers?
Last night, yes. And I say, like, because again, to me, the way they pitched last night was just ridiculous. You know, Price was similar to what he was in that Houston game. Fastballs in, changeups away, living on the corners the whole game. The whole game. And again, he's really doing it with two pitches, which should tell you plenty going forward about what you need to succeed as a pitcher if you do it right. But that aside, and then the bullpen guys, I told you, I looked this up this morning when I read it. Again, it was hard to keep my pants on, for crying out loud. In the last three innings of the game, Joe Kelly, Nathan Eovaldi, Craig Kimbrell. First of all, 33 pitches, 24 strikes. Okay, this is the same Red Sox bullpen that pitched like it was blindfolded for half the season. Okay, 33 pitches, 24 strikes, which means 11 pitches an inning to get through there. That's unbelievably efficient, first of all. And in terms of your strike percentage, off the charts. Okay, then I went back and counted 19 fastballs. 19. You know what the velocities were? In order. 98.3, 98.1, 99.9, 97.9, 98.8, 99 flat, 99 flat, 100.3, 99.9, 99.6, 99.9, 100.2, 99.7, 96.9, 97.1, 96.7, 97.4, 96.1, 97.2. Average velocity, 98.5, the Sports Hub, miles per hour. 98.5 average miles per hour in the last three innings. Thank you. Go back to the dugout. Have a nice night. See you in L.A. put that in your pipe and smoke it. I loved that. Oh, my God, did I love that. 19 fastballs, the slowest one was under 97. One. That was like textbook October pitching that game. It was awesome.
Is this in your notes? Is this true? 16 straight retired by the Sox at the end of the game is the most by an AL team in the World Series since Don Larsen's perfect game in 1956. Is that right?
Yes, we heard that stat last night on the postgame show. Yep.
16 straight retired by the Sox at the end of the game is the most by an AL team in the World Series since 1956 and Don Larsen's perfect game.
Correct.
Murray, you want to just give me your thought again on this series?
Yeah, it just, again, last night proves it's the bizarro Red Sox. And David Price, you know, his performance just shows you that Game 5 of the ALCS wasn't any fluke. He's now unburdened of whatever the hell has been bothering him for most of his career up until last week in the postseason. You can't get this team out with two outs. The resiliency is real. And I, like many people, I think we collectively all underestimated them. You know, for most of this year, I mocked those 108 wins, obviously, had the asterisk on them at one point. And again, they just prove they were legit this whole season. They really were.
Well, so what I really more meant was if your bullpen, the wheel of gutless bums, is setting World Series records that haven't been touched since perfect games in 1956, it's probably your year.
It might be. This might be their year.
Yeah, it's probably their year.
It just might be their
year. That's probably a sign of something.
I mean, maybe this is just their year.
That this Red Sox bullpen, which is their weakness, is doing things that haven't been done since perfect games in 1956.
I mean, they were an arson squad for most of this year.
It's unbelievable.
Like you said, it was like they were blindfolded half the time. And Joe Kelly is ridiculous.
He is. Yeah.
I'm
telling you, he's Pedro. No, that's the plan now. They get six out of the starter, Pedro in the seventh, Evaldi in the eighth, Kimbrel in the ninth. It's ridiculous. It is. It's ridiculous. Last night, it was a curveball. The night before, it was a changeup. It's like no matter what he throws, it's world class.
His touch on his off-speed pitches, whether it's just the straight change or the curveball, I've never seen him do that. I've seen him throw 100, like we've seen that. But have his off-speed pitches like that? I've never seen that.
No.
I've never seen him do that. I mean, even when he was going well in the beginning of the season, he didn't do that.
No. And it's a combination of the two that makes him impossible to touch. Because you go up there as a left-handed batter, and then all of a sudden, here it comes, a hammer, right smack in the middle of the plate. And you're like, oh, God. Now, as soon as I saw that, I said, this is ridiculous.
Jimmy Stewart tells us, Joe Kelly, Nathan Eovaldi, Craig Kimbrel in the World Series. 18 up, 18 down. 18 batters, 18 outs.
Perfect game.
Give me a break. Numbers of the starters out of the bullpen, the Rover. All right? So this is going back to the beginning of the division series. This postseason, the Rover position, Porcello against New York, Sale game four against New York, Porcello in Houston game two, the Eovaldi stuff here the last three games. They've allowed two hits on 20 at-bats. Six innings pitched, zero runs allowed, five strikeouts, 94 pitches.
Yeah.
And none of it fluky, because the batters look flummoxed. They can't hit these guys.
No, the pitchers are dominating. They are. Last night, to me, was absolutely freaking filthy. As I think I said this last night, triple X porn. Filthy. That's what that was. It was absolute freaking filth.
All right, is it all over with David Price? All over? No longer choker, no longer this, no longer that. Is it all over? Is it done? Forget about it. Old storyline, Murray. You're going to have to ditch the voice and all your bits. It's over.
I'm not ditching the voice.
Is it over?
Yeah, it's over. In terms of his postseason failures and that narrative, yeah, it is now. Come on. He hasn't just won these last couple of games. He's been dominant in them.
Not quite yet.
Okay, Red Sox, again from Jimmy Stewart. Lifetime, overall, in the history of the organization, here are the Red Sox to throw six-plus innings and allow two or fewer runs.
This is the one that's hysterical.
And three or fewer hits in consecutive postseason starts. So again, to have consecutive postseason starts with two or fewer runs, three or fewer hits, and six-plus innings. Jim Lombard, 1967. Pedro Martinez, 1999. Derek Lowe did it in 2004, and David Price in 2018. Among the pantheon of all-time great Red Sox postseason performers.
I mean, look, again, this is what you're getting right now. You're getting all these stats pumped up because what they're doing, it really is. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I saw this one in Alex Speer today, too. I don't know if you saw this. He had a post a little while ago. The Red Sox so far, the bullpen. Remember when we were talking about the bullpen late in the year and all those blown saves? And we said they've blown more saves in the second half than any team in baseball? Second half, more blown saves than any team in baseball.
So that's true.
I mean, well, they did at one point,
yeah.
Right? I don't know how it ended up.
Yeah.
But Alex Speer wrote today, the Red Sox this postseason 6-for-6 in save opportunities. In postseason history, only five other teams, four of which were the Yankees of the late 90s with Mariano Rivera, okay, and the other one was the Indians in 2016 in that Andrew Miller year, have ever gone through an entire postseason converting at least six saves opportunities without blowing any. This bullpen's now one of them. Like,
I mean, talking about all-time teams, Andrew Miller at the height of his powers a few years back, and now it's these guys, the formerly aforementioned Wheel of Gutless Bums. Now they have teams shaking in their boots when they're, you know, it's Joe Kelly coming out of the bullpen where you normally you'd have guys licking their chops. So now it's like, I'm not going to be able to hit this guy.
Yeah, and Murray, the Yankees of the late 90s, you know who was on that 96 team with Mariano Rivera?
Joe Wetland.
Yeah, there you go. Joe Kelly Wetland. Exactly. It is. It's absurd. I mean, it is absurd. And so, again, everything you say about them, it's all on display on a nightly basis there. Benintendi makes a big play there in the outfield, maybe when Price is starting to, you know, leak a little bit. They go to the mound. They keep Price intact. They stay with him there in that fourth inning. They run the bases aggressively and, you know, and maybe to a fault to a degree last night. Two outs, nobody on. Two outs, nobody on in the fifth inning with the number nine hitter up.
What a freaking rally that was.
Single, and, single, walk, walk, single.
And Ryu had started to sort of exert himself a little bit. I think it was three up, three down in the fourth.
He was in a rhythm.
Okay, he was in a rhythm. He was looking good. His pitch count was low. He was looking like, okay, here's a Dodgers starting pitcher who's going to, you know, now we're going to see it. We're going to see this Dodgers advantage. So he goes 1-2-3 in the fourth, I believe. Gets the first two guys in the fifth, no problem. And here's Vasquez. He's got the bottom of the order, Vasquez. And he just pokes a little single to right. And the next thing you know, three runs are on the board and the Red Sox win. It's just unbelievable.
It is. It's like a chain reaction. And as it started, once Betts got the hit, then you said, uh-oh, here we go. Like now, and then Benintendi had a great at bat. And it's like they feed off it, right? Vasquez starts it, and then Betts' grounder, I think, went up the middle that time, right? So you get a little bit of a C&I hit there, and all of a sudden Benintendi gets in the box, and now he's digging in. Now it's like they, again, like they smell it. Like they know, oh, we got something going. Here we go. And a lot of times those things fizzle out. Not with this team. No way. Yeah, J.D. Martinez dumps one into right field. Ryan Madsen in between. Obviously, he called into the game. Wet himself on the mound again. Walked in a run the whole 9 yards. And then Martinez hits the ball to right. And the bullpen comes in and completely shuts them down.
Well, it got to the it's now at the point when Puig put them ahead, the Dodgers ahead, for the first time in these two games. It's like, this won't last. And it didn't. You know, it's just, you know, it's not. They're too good.
Okay, Boston, basking it. Yeah, you have the number. You're already lined up. We will get to you right after these words. I also have a giveaway for you later this hour. Details on that coming up next.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
1-2. Got it, looking to down. Taylor strikes out on three pitches. Another 0-2. Carter and Kemp didn't agree. Two out. And the 0-2 to Barnes.
I get it, you know, the numbers and all that, but this guy's a great pitcher. He's been one of the best pitchers in the big leagues for a while. And he cares. You know, in a personal note, I'm very, very proud of him, very happy for him that now he can keep pitching. Like he said the last time, you know, there's not going to be questions in spring training about David Price in October. He beat the Houston Astros in Houston. He beat the Dodgers in Fenway Park. I'm happy for that, you know, because he deserves it. This guy works. He cares about his teammates. He's one of the best pitchers in the big leagues.
You felt like you got over a hump with the win in Houston. What does winning a World Series game mean in the career context of stuff you've done now?
It's huge, you know, just to, this is the biggest stage, you know, in baseball. There's no other stage that's going to be bigger than, you know, pitching in a World Series game unless it's game seven of the World Series. So, you know, to be able to do that, that feels good for sure. You know, I'm pumped for myself, pumped for all my teammates and coaches for us to be two wins away and up 2-0 right now in the World Series. That's a good feeling.
So you've been here three full years now. What's it like at Fenway Park in late October when you win a game?
Cold.
Is that thing over too? All over? Big games, cold weather, pressure, all over with David Price? Done?
It feels that way.
Discarded storyline, discarded narrative, a dead and buried sports radio topic. A heretofore goldmine of talk radio is now dead? Is it dead?
See, I say no.
Of course you say no.
No, but I'll tell you why I say no.
And thank you for it.
Because unlike a lot of people, I don't think this thing is over yet. And again, look, do I like where they are? Of course. How do you not? But I also think, you know, the Dodgers' weakness is what? Left-handed pitching. And so their best lineup is with those lefty batters in there. They're going home. You're going to get Bellinger. You're going to get Peterson. You're going to get Muncy. You're going to get all those guys in the lineup now against Rick Porcello. I like that matchup for the Dodgers a lot in Game 3. I think there's a chance they are going to bash Porcello.
Okay. I want to get to those Dodger lineup lineups coming up here. But you're waiting. I promise phones. And so here you are. Glenn in Florida. Lead us off on David Price.
Hello. How you guys doing?
Good, Dave. What do you got? Or Glenn. I'm sorry.
Well, let me tell you one thing. My grandfather died a couple months ago, and he tried to call you folks many times because he thought Maz was God. So one thing I want to tell you is that living down here, I got to see David Price early when he was with Tampa Bay, and he was considered a God down here, and then he left. He left the other team and left that, and I think that he had a totally bad attitude, and then he got the contract with the Red Sox and said, oh.
So, Glenn, I'm just going to let you go. But thank you for the call. It's not – I mean, you tell me about David Price. Why did he cross the threshold this year? What about it? How come this was the year that he broke through?
I think that –
Was it just due? Every dog has his day?
That's part of it.
Or did something happen?
No, that's part of it. I also think that – I think Cora may have had a hand in this, but I think he got a good spot in Houston where he had a nice big lead and, you know, 3-1 in the series, short rest, and he was able to go out there and not overthink it. And it worked, and then that to me is the one that sort of now got him snowballing. Now all of a sudden it's, well, I can do it. And so the doubt disappears. But I think, you know, some timing helped. He's with the right team in the right place at the right time.
Okay, but you also think there was a pitch selection adjustment a little
bit? Oh, so yeah, look, I think that I think you've seen it dramatically here in the last two games. I went back, you know, how many times have I said to you, and this gets a little technical, and so just deal with me for a second.
Just give it to us.
That cut fastball that Price has thrown since he got here, that to a right-handed batter that starts outside and cuts over the edge, drifts into the middle of the plate and gets hit hard constantly. And I've said over and over, I hate that freaking pitch. I've hated it. He's a power pitcher. He's been a power pitcher his whole career, or at least the mentality of a power pitcher. Now all of a sudden he's trying to nibble on the outside corner and the ball drifts in and he gets hammered. You know what he's done the last two games? Fastballs in, changeups away. It's the most basic, traditional formula in pitching. And you know why? Because it works. When you have the kind of stuff that he has, hard in, soft away. If you make those right-handed batters respect your fastball inside, it opens up a world of possibility. So you know what he did here? I knew when Turner came up in that first at-bat in the first inning, Price was going to be okay. Fastball in, he struck him out the last pitch. And he didn't quite hit the corner. It was more like the inner quarter of the plate, maybe the inner third. But the philosophy was there. Nope, I'm not changing anything. This is what I do well. I am going to pitch to my strength right now. And that's what he's doing. Like, I love that. Trust your ability. You have the stuff. Go get them.
So he's ditched that little cutter. That's one technical adjustment.
He threw 7 of them last night. That's it. 7.
Bob and Dedham, what are your thoughts? Bobby! Okay, guys, we're taking phones. Please be ready to go. Soapy and Merrimack on David Price. Go ahead, Soapy.
Hey, guys, two questions. So with David Price, if he finishes this series strong, how much more consistent do you think his regular season will be next year? And then as far as the series goes, I think it's over. Cue the duck boats. But for the parade, where do you take a poop?
Where do you take a poop? It's a big issue.
Got to be porta potties lined up out there, aren't there?
Big issue. I don't care if there's porta potties.
This is part of the reason I don't go to parades.
2 million people on the streets of Boston. There's nowhere to poop.
No, I'm pooping in my house.
There's
That's what I'm saying.
Take care of it before you go to the parade.
Wear a diaper. Wear an adult diaper.
What?
Are you high?
No.
You telling someone to poop their pants?
If it means that much to you, when you've got to go and there's nowhere to go, wear an adult diaper.
No. You're going to walk around with a little surprise in your shorts?
Stop it.
Just trying to help out the people is all.
Just figure it out and take care of business before you go.
I mean, if you want to go to Halloween as Ryan Madsen, you can walk around with a diaper and poop in your pants.
I don't, you know, David Price in the regular season has never really been an issue for me. He's been
good.
He's been fine. He's been, you know, generally speaking, I think if you added up all of his regular season production, he's basically given you what $31 million gets you nowadays. Like, he hasn't been a total ripoff in the regular season.
No, he had a good regular season this year.
Yeah, but he was hurt last year, and so maybe he didn't get it last year. But on balance, I don't think that he's underperformed in the regular season. That's not my issue. It's now, and he's doing it now.
So here's why I tell you I don't think it's over, because I think there's a chance this thing comes back 3-2, and who gets the ball in game six?
Would it be David Price?
Right. And so now, you know, game six, cold weather again, clinching game. Maybe the Dodgers have a little momentum.
No. We're done with the cold weather. He can't use cold weather against me anymore.
I'm just telling you.
No. Last it was 40-something degrees last night. He pitched in the cold. He pitched in a big spot. That's over.
So it's gone forever.
It's over.
Yeah, Maz, we get your dug in. It's over.
I think it's over. Billion,
it's all over.
Billion Rhode Island, give me one normal call, please. Billy? Okay, you know what?
Oh, this is getting stupid now.
Our producers don't want to take calls ever. So they don't need an excuse to not take calls. Okay? I'm the one that wants to do it. So I'm telling you, pay attention, be ready, don't suck. Because if you do, you're going to shut it all down. And our producers will be the happiest people on the planet. And we'll just talk to ourselves.
So, again, I would tell you, try not to suck as a caller. That's sort of the motto. And this is becoming sort of a little catchphrase on the show now. Because right now, you kind of suck.
So just be ready. Unless I've done something wrong, which is possible. So Charlie or someone maybe want to look at that, because maybe I've just been hanging up on people who haven't been ready to go. That's entirely possible. We will continue with your thoughts on the Red Sox World Series win last night. I got a Bruins giveaway coming for you at 250. There's the giveaway, 250 for a Bruins thing. We got an update here from Murray, and when we come back, certainly the most surprising thing that has developed in this World Series. We'll get to that next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong, sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Seventh inning and a pitching change for the Red Sox. Joe Kelly takes over. 1-2 pitch. Struck him out. Kelly ready with another. Left side, Devers. Strikes out, and Joe Kelly with a 1-2-3-7.
So we had that guy early in the season, and then he struggled throughout the middle of the season. In September, he made some adjustments, and the stuff started playing again. But in October, he's been lights out. Breaking balls for strikes, good fastball, good changeup, presence on the mound, and I'm happy for Flacco. He's been tested the whole season. He went from being the guy in the 7th, 8th inning to just a guy in the bullpen, and now he's back to the equation. And when Joe is throwing strikes with all his pitches, he might be one of the toughest relievers in the big leagues, because his stuff is that good.
The surprise on the team has to be Joe Kelly. What does he call him, Flacco?
I guess. I don't know where that comes from.
Either way, Joe Kelly.
No question. I mean, these last two nights, again, I joked about it yesterday, but I'm, in some ways, I'm not kidding. The stuff you're seeing, the combination of curveball, changeup, fastball, like, and the effectiveness and the break on the pitches, it looks like Pedro. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, what happened? Murray, if you have twins, you name them. One of them Joe and the other one Kelly.
Yeah.
We're crying out loud. Holy crap. It's like, talk about coming out of nowhere. He's just ridiculous. 11 pitches last night, 8 strikes, throwing bullets, dropping in hammers in there. The night before it was changeups. It's like whoever gets in the box, he says, how do you want me to get you out? I'm looking at it going, this is just not. Where did this come from? You know, and so look, they want to.
Well, he was doing it in prior series. I just discounted it because it didn't feel like there was a lot of pressure, because he was coming in kind of in mop-up duty. But no, it's for.
And you can tell Cora's developing more confidence in him too, right? Because in the prior series, it felt like he was coming in when they were behind, and he was giving him an inning, even two. Like this series now, last night, you're in a situation where you're ahead 4-2. So no Barnes, no Brazier in this game. Kelly got the ball in the 7th. Then they went to Eovaldi and obviously Kimbrel. But that's a spot where 4-2, all of a sudden, Kelly's up. And you know what? We were saying this yesterday. I was happy to see him. Yeah. I looked at it and said, you know what? I'm okay with that. This guy's been throwing lights out. Susie, I think his first pitch was a curveball right smack dab in there. And I went, oh, my
it's
God. Here we go.
It's the secondary stuff he's throwing for strikes that I'm just not used to seeing. If there's one qualifier, is that they're still having him face the bottom half of the lineup.
True.
So he got what would have been Hernandez and Puig, and so like 6, 7, 8, I think, except they
pinch hit Muncy. So, you know, Muncy's a tough, legit, at, you know, bat. But that's the portion of the lineup they're bringing him for. He didn't get the six, which was the Machado, Turner, you know, the top half lineup. Each of the last two nights they've given Kelly the second half of that Dodger lineup. But he's dominating it, and it's just the stuff in a vacuum. I mean, I think he'd be getting anyone out. If your fastball is 100 and you're dotting off speed pitches at 83, then, well, you can't hit that.
You're untouchable.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're pretty much untouchable. Again, his first three pitches to Muncy were curve, change, curve. Two of them were strikes. And so now it's 1-2, and here comes 100. Like, you know, now Muncy's, like, leaning back, like, what's coming, right? I mean, it's ridiculous. He struck him out with a fastball.
Okay, we'll try this again. Jamie in Fitchburg, you're up next with Felger and Maz. Jamie, go ahead, please.
Hey, Maz and Murray, this is, I'm going back about a month or so, I'm going back a little bit, but remember that metric on the Baseball Reporters that ranked the bullpen, the Sox bullpen number one in the league, individual rates? What do you think about that stat now in terms of it justifying that, you know, that merit?
Hey, Jamie, thank you for the call, and it's a great point. Baseball America or whatever, the war people, had the Red Sox bullpen with the number one bullpen war in baseball, and we mocked them. We laughed at the nerds for days.
And I still will. I'll tell you why. Eovaldi wasn't part of that bullpen. But Porcello wasn't part of that bullpen. Like, that's a huge thing that they've changed there. Now, you want to tell me the other guys have gotten better? They have. Okay, no two ways about it. But I also think there's a little bit of a cause and effect there. None of these guys are in the eighth inning. And so they've kept them away from the eighth and the ninth. They're using them in the sixth and seventh. And as you said with Kelly, matching them up at the bottom of the lineup, they're using them right. They've pitched great. I don't want to take that part away from them. But I also think that the regular season number, like, come on. They weren't the best bullpen in baseball during the regular season.
Bradley in Pittsfield. Hi, Bradley.
Hey, guys. First-time caller, long-time listener. I want to talk about J.D. Martinez and how important he's been to the club and how you guys kind of threw him under the bus, said he couldn't pass a physical, and, you know, and how important he is. And I don't think they'd be where they are today without J.D. Martinez.
So, well, that last thing is sort of hard to quantify, but, I mean, we were wrong about him, which I think we admitted pretty early on. I mean, I haven't been fighting the J.D. Martinez fight for a long time. This intangible thing that everyone keeps talking about, how he prepares hitters and works with hitters and the iPad comes out and analyzing every swing and he's got other guys to buy in. Do you give that credence, Mass? Do you think that's a big factor?
A little bit, not a lot. I don't think it's a huge factor. I think that what happened with this team is they all bought in. I give Core a lot of credit for that. And if there were guys that looked at Martinez and saw him hit and said, hey, you know, what are you doing there? How does that work? And developed an interest in it? Yeah. Then fine. Great. Is that what made Jackie Bradley better in the second half? No. I think that he tightened up his swing and he got a little bit better and he was more consistent because his swing really did shorten up and tighten up quite a bit. So I often think mechanical adjustments are overrated with a guy like Bradley. I think it made a little bit of a difference. But, you know, again, the big thing is Martinez's bat and presence in the lineup in the game.
Billy in the car. Hi, what do you got for us, Billy?
Yeah, I called Maz a bunch of times on moving Mookie Betts around, and he mocked me for it, but they're actually thinking about doing this at second base, I think, when he's pitching in L.A. with Porcello. Do you think this will affect how he bats? And just because I suck sometimes doesn't mean I suck all the time. Thanks.
Okay, well, that last thing's an important point. It's true.
Yeah.
You have a bad moment, a bad day, a bad month. Doesn't mean you are bad, you know, you're bad overall.
No, don't I know it.
Okay, so I think those are words to live by. Thank you. Is there something new on Betts to second base?
No, I think he's going by the stuff early in the series. Mookie Betts is not going to play second base. I don't think, unless there is, again, some sort of like double switch or something, and they have to do something on the fly.
But Ian Brown of MLB.com, you know, during the middle of the Baseball Reporters last night, wrote a story saying that they're going to be sitting Jackie Bradley Jr. out. So,
okay, what if... How do you feel with J.D. Martinez's ankle?
So this is the variable now, is that Martinez isn't moving right.
Yeah, he looked like he was kind of ginger on it last night.
Yeah, you could see it. And again...
So you tell me. Let's say he doesn't improve. He looks the way he looks.
I don't think you can put him in the outfield.
You wouldn't play him.
I don't think you can put him in the outfield.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think he's moving right. I don't think he's moving well enough. And I suppose you could try it and then see what it looks like. You run the risk then of making it worse potentially. And, you know, now look, he'll get a couple of days of treatment here, so maybe it'll be better come tomorrow night. But based on last night, that outfield in Dodger Stadium is good sized. And so I think that if he can't move right, I don't know if he can put him out there. I'm worried about that. Like, I think that that's a significant variable because you could be going to L.A. You'll get their best lineup and lose J.D. potentially, maybe for a game, maybe two. Who knows? I don't know. I'm speculating here entirely. But if he's not moving right, I don't think you can put him out there.
Okay, we continue with whatever you want. Your thoughts on the Red Sox and what they did last night. Coming up next hour, I have some second guesses of the Dodgers and the way they've been handling things. We'll get to that. I also have a Bruins giveaway. Something free for you from the Bruins coming up next, so don't go anywhere.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
I love it.
You were right, Maz.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Hopefully I have a whole lot of October baseball left. You know, that's why I came to Boston. You know, I knew we would be in this position, you know, year in and year out. I'm happy that we have made it to this point, and I mean, everybody in our clubhouse, we all want four more wins.
It's a special season. You know, 108 wins, oof, that's a lot. They're consistent, they're very humble, they don't get caught up on the whole stuff. You know, they love to play baseball, and they're showing it.
That's a base hit. Here comes Bogarts. The Red Sox jump on top in game two. Another two-out RBI for Boston. It belongs to Kinsler.
In the center field for a base hit. Kinsler tried to leap, couldn't quite reach it. Freed delivers an RBI single, and it gives the Dodgers their first lead of the series. It's 2-1. Here's a 3-1. High ball four. The game is tied. Madsen walks Pierce.
What a chance for the big DH. Flies one into right. This one will drop. Red Sox are on top. Two-run score. It's 4-2. That is hit hard in the air to left. Back and a leaping grab by Benintendi.
Rice ready. 2-2 on the way to swing and a ground ball towards third. Devers on to first in time. And the side is retired. Three up, three down again.
A 1-2-3 sixth for the left-hander Price. Randall strikes out. And Joe Kelly with a 1-2-3 seventh. A 1-1 to Kemp. Should end it. Bogarts gathers it in. Red Sox up 2-0.
At least we know if things don't go well in L.A., we're coming back. So that's good. David was amazing. And then the bullpen did what they've been doing during October, and now we're up 2-0.
Jimmy Stewart's looking back there to game two. Thanks to him, executive producer. We continue with your thoughts. I also have a Bruins giveaway for you here coming in a few minutes, so stay tuned for that. Phil and Malden, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for the call. I think the series is over. I'd like the Sox in five. But are you guys going to start lightening up on Benintendi?
Lighten up on Benintendi. Have we done anything on Benintendi today?
What did we say wrong about Benintendi in the last couple of days?
Okay, but he is a player that in the past, maybe this is what the caller's referring to, that you've been very critical of, or it has bugged you.
Yeah.
He bugs you.
He does bug me a little bit, yeah.
Does he still bug you?
No, not of late. No, I mean, although the other night, I'll tell you, in game one, I didn't love the way he went after a couple of balls in the outfield. One was that first line drive, you know, semi-line drive that landed at the base of his feet. It was the ball, essentially the same kind of play that came on and made the catch in Houston. He was passive on it. He backed off it. I didn't know if it was because of the wet turf or maybe he was having some sort of leg problem. And then, there was a ball later in that inning where the single went through the hole at short. He didn't charge it aggressively to come throw to the plate. Generally, I think he's a little too cool for school. That does bug me about him. But in this series, he has not bothered me.
How was the catch last night?
Good. Not great.
Properly rated?
Yeah. Good play. Good play. Yeah, I mean, well, not like a ridiculous, you know, unbelievable catch, but in the World Series, everything gets amplified. I would say the timing of it was good because it was at the start of the fifth. Price had kind of a difficult fourth.
Huge timing.
Yeah. And so now if they start the next inning with a guy on base, let alone an extra base hit, maybe Price starts to teeter a little bit, and that didn't happen.
So to me, the catch was same thing in the Houston. It was about the jump. You know, that was a really hard hit ball. And if he gets a bad jump, he doesn't catch up to it. Once he had the jump and once he tracked it, he should have caught it and he caught it. But to me, it was about the jump.
I mean, all three of their outfielders read the ball off the bat very well.
Okay, Billy in Rhode Island. Billy, go ahead.
How you doing, Felger?
Good, Billy.
I just want to ask Maz a question. Maz, when the series is over, and the Red Sox win the World Series. I think we should do a show on all the comments you've made and about the Red Sox and about all their pitching and everything else. But one thing I will agree with you today is I would not put J.D. Martinez in right field. That guy should be in the dugout waiting for an opportunity with men on base and pinch hit him at the right time. That's the only way I would use him, but I would not put him in the outfield. That guy could.
Okay, Billy. Oh, I'm sorry, Billy. I cut you off. The thing about J.D. Martinez, and when you get there, is you have to understand, folks, if you can't play him in the outfield, you can't use him for more than one at bat. It's not like you can bring him in the fourth if they bring in a lefty and then play him the rest of the, if you don't want him out there, you don't want him out there. So it's sort of like a burned sort of move.
Sure.
Right? And I was going to say, you know, can it even be part of a double switch? I get it. Yes, it can. It can. But, you know, anything that we – so it's not like, you know, what the Dodgers are doing. They'll get a certain matchup on the mound and they'll bring in someone in for someone and that person stays in at a certain position. No, you are one off with J.D. Martinez. If you're not going to play him in the field, you're not going
to
play him in the field.
No, I want him to play in the field. I mean, I'm just – what I'm concerned about now is that ankle. And so if he's okay to play in the outfield, if he's moving okay, well, then fine, put him out there. I'm just telling you that based on what I saw last night, he's not moving right. And, there was one play, and I don't remember what it was, when he was walking back to the dugout, and you could see the limp. And if he's limping, walking back to the dugout, what's he going to be on when he's running?
Let's get a couple thoughts on David Price. Mike in Cambridge, go.
Just quickly on David Price, his run sort of reminds me a little bit of Derek Lowe's back in 04 when everybody thought he was a mental case, and then he came out and pitched really well in the playoffs. My main point is, can everybody just pump the freaking brakes? Has anybody not come back from a two-game series lead in Major League Baseball history before? And not to mention, the next two pitchers the Sox have going are both righties, which means you're going to see predominantly left-handed lineups. And if you have J.D. Martinez, who's not moving well out in right field, like, that's a recipe for disaster. And to me, I don't know if you guys agree with this, but it felt like once Eovaldi was in the game last night, I thought they got a couple good rips on him, and I'm a little bit worried about him going in game four.
Okay, Mike, thanks for the call, and thanks for that phone. I mean, let that be a model to everyone. I'm not worried about Eovaldi. I didn't see that with Eovaldi.
Me neither.
Okay.
I feel good about Eovaldi right now. I think he's throwing the absolute crap out of the ball.
Okay, no question. So Eovaldi's not a list of concerns. At 2-0, I felt for the Dodgers to give him a series. They had to split here. The path for the Dodgers was to split here, get 2 out of 3 in L.A., and then, you know, see if they can steal one back here in Game 6 and Game 7. You know, without that 2-0 lead, without that 1-1 split, I'm sorry. They got to be perfect back in Los Angeles, and they're not going to be. So, I feel it's over. I'm just curious if L.A. can give them a series. You know, can that alleged pitching advantage that I thought L.A. had, will that show itself? I thought it was starting to last night with Ryu, but will it show in L.A.? And, you know, will we even get a series? Is this even going to come back? That's, you know. But I hate the Dodgers' chances at this point. Let's just put it like that.
I mean, I felt like Game 3 was a must-win for them no matter what because of the pitching matchup. And so it could have been Eovaldi in theory, I guess, against Buehler. But the Porcello game, for me, is a better way to say it. I think they're going to kill Porcello. I just think it's a horrible, horrible matchup for Rick Porcello.
Rick and Peabody has something for Murray. Go ahead, Rick.
Murray, I got one quick question, quick statement. You've been giving David Price crap all year. Why don't you tell us in your David Price impression how his ass tastes?
It's quite flavorful. And suck it, all you haters, including you, Murray. You couldn't have been more wrong. Except for last week when you said I was going to go out there and be nails, and I was.
I was hard on him all for years, plural. Up until last week when I said he'd win Game 5 and be dominant in it, and he was. And he won again last night because it's the bizarro Red Sox.
I was hoping you were going to say, Murray, it doesn't make my food taste any better, but it makes Murray's ass taste pretty good.
So, it's, I just wonder, is it over? That's the thing. You know, when you lose a glorious storyline like that, when you lose just a glorious money sports radio narrative, it's sad. I'm getting nostalgic. It's over. Big games.
I'm not there yet.
The cold, all the nonsense, all the snippiness. I think, you know, he still gave me a couple things last night to be annoyed by, including the kid at the podium, but you know how I feel about that. But you know, other than that, I think he's saying the right things. It's not just saying the right things. Like, I think he's really sort of owned it in a way that tells you he's had growth, or he's had an epiphany, or he's just, he's sort of changed his tune. Like, someone got to him, or he got to himself, or something.
Well, I thought that the most telling thing is I thought he was getting squeezed on calls, because I thought that ump was inconsistent the whole night, and it was starting to frustrate him. And then his last inning, he was awesome.
Well, but like, not just that.
His last two.
But the way he talked to the ump. Like,
right.
Even after the inning, he puts his arm around him, and like they have this conversation, like this heart-to-heart, where at the end of it, they didn't show it on TV, but I read about it, where the umpire was like patting him on the shoulder at the end of the thing. Like, it's like, I mean, I don't know what's left with David Price.
Yeah, because most pitchers in that situation would lose their mind, bark at the ump, but instead he was calm, cool reasoning. Come on, man, I'm not going to say anything about your eyesight, but you know, what's going on here? You're just kind of squeezing me. What's going on?
So, look, I still think there's a chance it comes back here for Game 6, and he's on the mound, which is why I tell you it's not over yet. But that's just my two cents. But I'm telling you, in terms of how he's acting, look, he's like a different guy. I mean, he's like a different guy.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.